Now, it's time for a little R&R.
Call into the bucket, lays it up and in.
Ball game, Rizzo!
Live in the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, this is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
This team is going to be tough when they finally get it together.
Sit back and relax. Let Russo and Rizzo take you home.
Oh, mercy!
The 5 p.m. hour on Russo and Rizzo, presented by Group Greek Moving and Stores with Colin Russo and Damian Perez. We're at the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. If you missed any of the show today, you missed any of it and you want to listen back, go listen back at Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, all those great places, just go to Russo and Rizzo. 888-760-3776, number to get into the program today. We're streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter/X, and also on your radio dial, ESPN 106.3. Damian Perez is our man behind the glass today. Damian, how are you today, my friend? What's going on?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right. Let's bounce around. Let's have some fun. Let's do a little 5 and 5 presented by Flagler Credit Union.
Five topics.
High five.
5 o'clock.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Let's get out of here.
Endless takes.
You can't handle the truth.
All gas. No brakes.
And it's shaking bank time.
It's time for The 5 at 5.
Hold on to your butts.
Presented by Flagler Credit Union, proud supporter of FAU Athletics. Number 1.
Ja Morant has, quote, lost his joy. Should Memphis consider trading their star point guard? Should teams check in on Ja Morant's availability? What do you think about Ja Morant this start to the season?
Well, all these teams have, and the Memphis Grizzlies, by the way, who are 3-5, who famously fired their coach with about, 10 games remaining in the season, 2 weeks remaining in the season. And it was a bizarre time to fire their coach. And now Ja Morant, who has had off-court issues, who has been erratic in terms of getting onto the court, been a great player when healthy, went at the top of his game, but he's never at the top of his game. He, now this has turned into a little bit of a circus in terms of what teams should do with Ja Morant. And, he got the ban with the gun thing. It's just all over the place. People are now checking tabs on whether they should see if Ja Morant's available for trade, if the Grizzlies were to move on from him. A couple things here. Damian, I'm curious on your thoughts. Ja Morant, how many teams would trade their starting point guard today that are playoff teams for Ja's services? Let's be honest for a second. Because if you're an NBA team, I think it goes without saying, it's not unfair to say that Ja Morant provides a distraction, that he has not necessarily been the most available player. But there are reports out there now saying that general managers and coaches want nothing to do with him. And I'm not saying that's every coach, but if you're sitting here saying, you know, Cleveland wouldn't want him and New York wouldn't want him, are you making an argument that, you know, would Detroit take him? Probably not. That's just in the Eastern Conference. We haven't even gotten to the West, where San Antonio wouldn't take him. OKC wouldn't take him. The Lakers definitely wouldn't take him. The Nuggets? No, not with Jamal Murray there. The Houston Rockets would take him. How about that? The Houston Rockets would say yes.
Would they, though?
They don't have the assets to trade for him. But if they were to get a little gift wrap, Ja Morant, they probably would.
But
say
they've
yes.
been playing Amen Thompson at that point guard, and I feel like they're pretty high with his with.
And
his
they've
upside.
Won 4 in a row. But the way I'd say it is no Van Vliet, they'd make a decision.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Golden State, Minnesota, I'd make the argument that neither of those two teams would want him. And then you go down the list, the Clippers. None of these teams can make moves for him. Ja Morant to me, just like the rest of that draft class, which was famously Zion Williamson at 1, who's hurt with a hamstring injury, Ja Morant at 2, and RJ Barrett at 3. Not only is that one of the more disappointing classes we've seen in a while, Hero might be the best player to come out of that class. But I sit here and say that, I watched the Grizzlies last year. At what point can we keep pointing around everybody else and saying, well, I'm not happy about this, I'm not happy about this, I'm not happy about this? This is an internal thing with Ja. He's a difficult player to deal with. I remember Blake Griffin on the Amazon Prime coverage a couple days ago did a whole segment on Ja Morant's body language as a leader of his team, and he basically ripped him to shreds. This is pathetic.
Personally, I'm a Heat fan, and I'm not saying this because I'm a Heat fan, but I think Ja Morant would have fit well with the Heat. There's a built-in culture that I think can kind of control him.
You're saying he needs a little bit of the drill sergeant mentality.
And on the court, I feel like he probably would have fit in well with Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo in the bunch.
Now, here's one thing I would add. Ja Morant, this is really getting into the nitty-gritty of it. But the Grizzlies last year with their previous regime, the previous coaching regime, they changed it up. And they basically eliminated the amount of on-ball screens that they did offensively. And Ja Morant's usage went down, but their offense output went up. That's exactly what the Heat did this year, because the Heat basically adopted the philosophy that the Grizzlies did last year. And Ja did not love the usage attached to that previous offense. So I don't know if he'd love the offense, because he wants to be ball dominant.
Yeah,
I think he wants the ball as much as possible. And it just goes to show that certain NBA players nowadays are just incapable of playing off the ball. And they're incapable of fitting into a system. They want themselves to be the system. Now, the Grizzlies, can I even make a declaration that I don't think this Grizzly team, after the couple 51 seasons that they had 2-3 years ago, I don't think they'll ever do anything special? Because I don't know, if you haven't seen it yet in terms of their growth and development, when are you going to see it? Jaren Jackson, Ja Morant, they have players. They don't have top-end players. And Ja Morant's been in the league for what, 4, 5, 6 years now? And we're still playing the game of, can he be a professional? I don't know. If I'm an NBA GM, I don't know if I'd want to touch that. I don't know if I want to get involved with that. And it's not to say that the Grizzlies are shopping him, but anybody's available for the right price. Ask Luka Doncic. Everybody's available. So I don't know if they would trade him. I don't know if I'm a GM, but I'd go after him. Because at what point are you going to run into something else? This is the same guy who had to walk into Adam Silver's office and get lectured about, you know, gun violence and his reputability amongst children who watch the NBA. And then he had to sit out for season, this, that, and it never ended. And now he's losing his joy for basketball. There's nothing like an NBA player who's making $500 million losing his joy for basketball when you're number one option on the team. Come on.
You think he's trying to maybe push his way out of Memphis?
No, I don't think so, because it's too early. It's too early. Maybe he's waiting. Maybe it's strategic. Maybe he doesn't like it in Memphis anymore. Maybe he doesn't like the coach. I mean, they just fired the coach. I mean, how many coaches can you dislike? They're not going to continue to do this.
They also traded away Desmond Bane.
I think they're going to... I mean, they got rid of Fizdale. I mean, come on. They played this game before. They're not going to continue to do this. If I'm Ja Morant, I don't touch him with a 10-foot pole. Bad teams would go after him. I have a hard time seeing a great team going after Ja Morant. That's number one. Number two, would you do the same thing, Damian? Am I wrong?
Yeah, I've never been too high on Ja Morant. I think he's a bit overrated. And all the extracurricular stuff that just comes with it. If I'm a GM, I agree. I would just stay away.
The one thing that I might agree with is that the thing is, if you're bringing in a personality with the intent to kind of hone it in, like what the Heat would do, you know, the Heat, oh, we could handle him. We could put a leash on his antics. We could handle this. Our Heat culture will supersede that. Didn't they just get rid of a hothead personality?
But it worked. It worked. He was there for, what, 5, 6 seasons?
And Jimmy Butler's better than Ja Morant. He's better than Ja Morant. Are we on the same page?
100%.
He's better than Ja Morant. Is Ja Morant capable of carrying a team like Jimmy Butler did? I don't know.
I don't think so.
And maybe the Heat are finally in a good spot where they're not even with Hero back, and they're playing well.
Yeah, Norman Powell has been a great signing.
So if they want to be, you know, beat him by a village, inserting Ja Morant into the equation is probably not the solution to that. So I don't think Heat, and I don't know about other teams being involved, because unless you're, you know, the 76ers wouldn't want to do that. They got young players all over the place.
And I don't think the Heat, after acquiring Norman Powell and Davion Mitchell, I don't think there's room for another point guard in that offense.
They'd have to give up one of the big guys. Yep. They'd have to give up a Hero or something.
Or Khalil
like that.
Ware.
That's not worth it.
Nope.
That's not worth it. Number two.
Number two.
The College Football Committee has recently updated their rankings and also their first projection for what the playoffs would look like if they ended today. Miami is below Notre Dame despite beating them. Did the committee get this one right? What are your thoughts?
So Miami's at 18, Notre Dame's at 10. In the College Football Playoff rankings officially, which just came out yesterday. Damian, I'm curious on your thoughts here. Miami, they beat Notre Dame head-to-head in the first game of the season. It was 27-24 in Miami. And then Notre Dame lost the next game, the following week, to Texas A&M, who is 3 in the rankings. They lost them 41-40 at home. Since then, Notre Dame has pretty much played great. And since then, Miami is on a steady downward spiral. They've lost two of the last 3 weeks to Louisville and to SMU on the road last week. This is the classic tale of should head-to-head supersede everything when the records are the same? And the answer is no. Head-to-head is a piece of the puzzle. Should they be that far apart in rankings themselves? No, they should not be that far apart. But if you're going to look at Miami and you're going to look at Notre Dame and you're going to tell me who's in a better spot, if you're going to sit here with a straight face and tell me Miami is, you're wrong. Because Miami looked so much better what they did in week one comparatively to now, comparatively to Notre Dame, who looked like a different team week zero, and they still played well, to now. Notre Dame is better right now than what Miami was then. There's a reason that these rankings change. Despite the head-to-head, having a head-to-head later in the year makes that much more of a difference comparatively to early. Because they're different teams 3 months in between of game time. I would say that the committee got this right. I don't know about putting them that far apart, but Notre Dame's a better team than Miami right now. I don't know how you could disagree with that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. This is a case of, I don't want to say recency bias, but if we look at where Miami started and where Notre Dame is at today, it's a completely different landscape. Miami started with Carson Beck looking like a Heisman candidate, and in the last three games,
he's 3 weeks.
Cost them the game with a very costly interception.
Or the pick against SMU and then the picks against Louisville.
So if we're looking at where the teams are today right now and throw away what happened week one, I mean, Notre Dame is definitely the better team.
And think about the losses. You want to talk about good losses? Notre Dame lost to Texas A&M, who's number three, and Miami, who's a pretty good team, not a great team, but it looked great at that point in the year.
And A&M had an argument to be in that one seed, honestly. They could
absolutely
have been the number one
and
seed.
A&M won in the last play of the game. So that on a fourth down, where there was probably an offensive holding that they missed.
That loss definitely aged perfectly for Notre Dame in a sense.
And Notre Dame, since then, they've killed Arkansas. They killed NC State. They beat USC pretty handedly. It's not a great schedule. Listen, I'm anti-Notre Dame too. But Notre Dame has looked better, and I'm not trying to be an apologist for them. But Notre Dame is going to get that spot if they win out. I think we knew that right when they started winning games after the two losses. Unless they lose one to Navy or to Pitt or something like that, we're going to be seeing Notre Dame in that college football playoff. They're already booking hotel rooms. Number three.
To stay on the topic of college football, if the committee, when taking into account the playoff rankings, if they had to cut out a specific team based on their conference, which conference would that be?
So the question here is whether the committee would be willing to cut out an ACC school or a Big 12 school if it came down to it. There are two, as it stands today, Big 12 teams that are in the top 10, BYU and Texas Tech, who both play each other this weekend. As for the ACC, there's about four in a row, essentially, in the teens, with Louisville, Virginia, Georgia Tech, Miami. Those are all sort of next to each other. Now, the question remains that if the committee has to make a decision, and there are four or maybe even five SEC teams that are going to get in, there's a group of five, there's Notre Dame, all of a sudden we're at six or seven, and then on top of that, you're going to have three Big Ten at the very least. Then you're looking at 10, a Big 12 school. Now we're looking at maybe one or two in favor of those two schools. Would you cut out a Big 12 school or would you cut out an ACC school? If it stands today, I would say if I was deciding it, I would cut out the ACC school, but I actually think the committee would cut out the Big 12 school. Because I think if the committee, if you were to ask them behind closed doors, if they were to rank those conferences in terms of importance, TV money, brand recognition, level of team, I think they'd put SEC 1, Big 10 2, ACC 3, Big 12 4. Might be unfair, but I think the bulk of the Big 12, the back half to the front, or to the middle, upper 60%, is not very good, whereas the ACC actually has quite a few pretty good teams. So I think that's be their perspective on it. But weirdly enough, BYU and Texas Tech might deserve it. But if one team can get cut out there, they will do it. They will do it. That's what I would be nervous about with the committee. Would you agree with that, Damien? You think they'd cut out a Big 12 school?
Spot on.
Yeah. Number four.
All right. So as we know, Kyler Murray has lost his starting job to Jacoby Brissett. Many are arguing that maybe his future in the NFL is well in doubt. Now, bringing it back to when he was drafted, he was also drafted to an MLB, the Oakland A's, in the first round.
Famous Oakland A player.
Two-part question. Did he make the right decision choosing football over baseball? And is there any chance, any realm of possibility, he quits football?
Oh boy,
to play baseball.
Can Kyler Murray go back?
Yeah.
Would you be shocked if a 28-year-old Kyler Murray just entered the minor leagues for the Oakland A's? Or the currently the Athletics period?
No.
Yeah, I would. Damien, I'd be blown away.
I mean, think about the position the Oakland A's are. I know they had a good season, but they're still in the middle of their rebuild. Why not?
I mean, he'd be a 28-year-old in the minor leagues. I guess we've seen crazier things. Nathan Lucas played 11 years in the minor leagues and then led off a World Series game. So I guess there's some argument to that. Here's why Kyler Murray made the right decision. Because he's got a 5-year, $230 million contract with his name signed next to it. What about that, Damien? You leave that behind?
I got no argument there. No argument
that
there.
That would be a love of the game moment if he went to go play in the minor leagues and play for...
Sometimes we forget
Play for $18,000 a year, you know, in the Las Vegas Aviators.
And this goes for head coaches, too.
Yeah.
You know, they get fired. We feel bad for them, but...
In Chattanooga or, you know, one of these... The Quad City River Bandits go play for these affiliates.
I mean, James Franklin.
Yeah. All I'd say, Kyler Murray made the right decision. He did. He's number one overall pick in the NFL. The problem is he has not improved in, what, 3 or 4 years? He hasn't been better in 3 or 4 years.
He hasn't even been healthy in a way.
And if the Arizona Cardinals all of a sudden turn this around here, my question is to them, what's the plan? What are you looking for if you're a Cardinal fan this season? Because they're a lot like the Falcons in the sense that there's a lot of, and not a lot of confirmed, all right, we're really bad, we're really good. Arizona's in a really hard division. They got it, so they're going to have really hard divisional games coming up. And they're 3-5. They got Seattle on the road this week. I'd be blown away if they won that game. So all of a sudden, let's say they're 3-6. What's the plan? Jacoby Brissett's going to keep trotting them out there. They're going to steal a couple games here and there. And all of a sudden, if they're able to, you know, win 5, 6, 7 games, get the 8th pick in the draft, sort of look around thinking, all right, well, you know, the walls aren't completely crumbled in, but there's cracks. What do we do then? That's where I sit with the Arizona Cardinals. You're between a rock and a hard place in terms of what direction you want to go, left or right. That's where the NFL is. There are teams that go down the middle, and there's teams that go right and left. Right is win now championship window. Left is what the Jets did yesterday. We are bad, and we're going to be bad because we want to rebuild this thing quick. And then there's the teams in the middle. That has sort of been the Miami Dolphins. It's been the Atlanta Falcons. That's been the Arizona Cardinals. It's, well, we don't really know how... We can't really commit to being really bad. But we're not going to be really good anytime soon. That's sort of where they sit. And I don't know if that's the best spot to be in. You'd almost rather a guarantee that at least you're going to get good picks in the draft or you're going to be a playoff contending team. Tough spot for the Arizona Cardinals. I feel for their fan because that team never seemingly has it figured out, especially with Kyler Murray at quarterback, and now you're not going to have him for 4 or 5 weeks. Let's go to number five.
Number five.
MLB Game 7 drew approximately 51 million average viewers.
Over 50 million. How about that?
Incredible. Is that, by the way, that's the most watched baseball game in 35 years. Is Ohtani the most recognizable international athlete?
Is there an argument to this or am I wrong?
I think you compete with soccer.
Let's exclude the obvious. Let's exclude every soccer player, right? All the major ones. Obviously, nobody's bigger than Messi, Ronaldo, the big name pieces. Is he more recognizable? I would say LeBron's at 1A.
Yeah, Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan, yeah, even in his old age, Michael Jordan's probably 1B. Curry's probably 1C. Is Ohtani that next athlete? Is that
Tiger
unfair
Woods,
to say?
Maybe Tiger Woods?
Tiger Woods?
Mike Tyson? Boxing's very popular internationally.
Let's stay current.
If we're talking current,
Let's think about this. Are there NBA players outside of LeBron and Curry that are bigger than Ohtani internationally? I'd say the answer is no.
Luka Doncic?
No. I would say no. I'd be surprised about that. I'd say no, maybe more Instagram followers.
Because he's huge in Spain, too.
Yeah, that's true. You know why Ohtani's huge? Because Ohtani has an international appeal to actually watch the games.
And he's got the Asian community,
That guy is the king of Japan.
Right.
And I know China has a huge basketball following. It's not big for baseball, but hey, everybody in South America, all the baseball-loving areas, whether it be like the Venezuelas of the world or
Puerto Rico.
They all love baseball, and they all know Ohtani. And you know what? American baseball is not huge, but it has its areas of influence where people like it. Canada, I mean, he's a recognizable North American athlete. I don't know if he is bigger than his basketball counterparts. He's bigger than a lot of football guys. Probably
football guys can compete with him. I mean, right. It probably would be Tom Brady definitely can, but he's retired. So
Mahomes?
He's, Mahomes, I don't think he could compete with.
Is Ohtani a bigger athlete internationally, recognition-wise, than Mahomes?
Yes. And I would say that with no hesitation.
What about domestically?
No.
In the United States?
No.
I would agree with that.
Absolutely not.
I would agree with that. But there was an argument. He's bigger than baseball. He's bigger than baseball. But he's bigger internationally, which is something to be said because NFL dominates domestically, but internationally is where, you know, people still know American football. They're learning it. But Ohtani's bigger than that.
And baseball's probably okay with that.
Probably are okay with that. Obviously, nothing comes close to, if you want to talk about the biggest athletes in the United States, it's Lionel Messi down there at Inter Miami because he's the most recognizable athlete probably in the world.
Yeah.
So it's a little different. But in terms of what we're seeing from baseball, not only is he the most recognizable baseball athlete, he is entering some pretty prestigious ranks of internationally acclaimed and internationally recognized athletes. That's what I would say.
And is he 30?
Yeah, he's 30 years old, I believe, flat.
So he's in his peak.
Yeah. He's not going anywhere. Let's say
absolutely
that.
Absolutely not.
That was the 5-5 presented by Flagler Credit Union. Download the Hard Rock Bet app today on the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. Hard Rock Bet is the best because it caters to both types of players. Whether you're the new type of player that is still trying to figure out how to operate a sports book, it has you covered. Or if you're the experienced gambler or the experienced player and you really want a lot out of your sports book in terms of you want to make complicated parlays, you want to touch on the weird leagues and bet weird leagues player props game by game live, Hard Rock Bet has you covered. The interface caters to both sides. That's why I love it, because when I was new and inexperienced on the app, it was easy to learn. But once I got experience, now I know exactly where to go to find any league, any game, any time, any bet. That's the Hard Rock Bet app. And bet just $5 in the app, get $150 in bonus bets immediately if you bet just $5 and win it. That's how easy it is on the Hard Rock Bet. Then you get $150 to play with the NBA, college basketball, college football, NFL, you name it. It's all on NHL, too, with the Florida Panthers down there in Sunrise. Hard Rock Bet, it's your place to go. It's offered by the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Must be 21+, physically present in Florida. The wager, terms and conditions apply. If you or somebody you know has a gambling problem, please call 1-833-PLAY-WISE. Damian Perez, Colin Russo, Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
F45 downtown West Palm Beach has everything. It has class style working out. It's more the functional style of working out. It's classes, so it means you show up, you get 45 minutes in, you're out of there. That's through the morning up until the afternoon. Check out F45 Downtown West Palm Beach on Instagram to see more information because it's great for the functional side. You feel mobile after. You feel good. It's all about getting your heart rate up, getting the sweat going, a bunch of like-minded fitness individuals in a class-style setting with a bunch of two coaches on site making sure you're doing everything right. It is that easy at F45 because you can just show up and just follow along on the screen, turn your brain off, and then all of a sudden your workout is done. You feel good about the rest of your day. Check it out today, F45 Downtown West Palm Beach. Damian, Miami's sitting at 18. They're 6-2. They've had two bad losses in 3 weeks. Is it too early to say that Carson Beck, who rarely lost at Georgia when he was there, has been a failure for the Miami Hurricanes?
It's probably too early to absolutely cement him as a failure, but
because 3 weeks ago, I mean, he's got 14 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. 3.5 weeks ago, we'd be having a discussion about him being a Heisman candidate.
Correct.
Now everything has changed in the 3-game period. Is that enough to label his short-lived, I guess, you know, experience at Miami a failure?
The only reason I don't want to label it a failure yet is because I think he still has time to turn it around. There's still time to save the season, make the playoffs,
plus
and completely
help.
Change the
plus
narrative.
They need help. You're right. They need to win out. There's no doubt about that. But they do need help. They have two losses in conference, so they need other teams to lose. But with Syracuse, NC State, Virginia Tech, and Pitt remaining on the schedule, you think that there's an opportunity for Beck to salvage his Miami reputation?
Yes, there's definitely opportunity.
But he's got no margin for error, right?
Right. I think if he loses one game, that's his margin for error. He loses one game, the season's a failure.
I mean, let's be honest for a second. Carson Beck was following up a guy who got invited to New York as a Heisman candidate. The guy went number one overall in the draft. And Carson Beck was somebody with more college experience for a big-time SEC team. You'd think, oh, you know, he's going from the SEC where he's playing, you know, 13 first rounders
right,
every 2 weeks.
It should be easier for him.
You'd think it'd be a little slower in the ACC, but no, that has not been the case. He is having the same issues that he dealt with in some capacity at Georgia. And maybe it's a player thing. Maybe he just hasn't developed the way he wanted him to. I know he had the elbow injury. He was beat up last year. But 2 years ago, they were talking about this kid being a top five pick in the draft coming into the Georgia year last year. They were talking about that this year after the first 3-4 weeks. Hey, might he be the first quarterback taken? And now 2 and 3 games later where he's, in my opinion, was a big component in both the reasons that they lost the game, especially against Louisville.
I mean,
especially against Louisville.
He definitely
with the 4 interceptions.
Was.
And then he threw the interception in overtime against SMU. Carson Beck, I'll say it. He's been a failure at Miami. Because the expectation, unfairly, might, is to make that college football playoff. And unless Miami is able to put together nothing short of a miracle, win and get help, that's a miracle. Win and get help. Quite a bit. In the ACC. Because they're not getting in without the ACC championship berth. And there's a chance that they don't even get in if they get into the ACC championship and lose. That third loss, they probably still don't get in. So they need to not only win out, they need to get to that ACC championship game and they need to beat whoever they're playing. That might be the most stable, confident route that Miami has to make the college football playoff. Can Carson Beck do that? If I had to put money on something today, I would say no. Are we sitting here, Damian, saying that they're gonna convincingly beat Syracuse, who's not any good, NC State, Virginia Tech, and Pitt? Two of those games are going to be dogfight traps.
That's the thing, though. They should win those games. If you're UM, you should win those games.
Can we get off the horse for a second about the games that Miami should win and shouldn't win? Because I feel like Miami never wins the games they should win. So why should they win these games to begin with? They never win the game that they're supposed to win. Talk about Syracuse, all these bad losses they had last year. They never, ever win all the games they should. And they haven't in years. Manny Diaz. They never win the games they should win. That's their problem. That's been their Achilles heel as a program. So you look at it and say, well, they should win this one. They should win that. They should beat Syracuse. They should beat NC State. Should they? We thought things looked different because of how they started the year, where they beat Florida, Florida State, USF. They played all those inner Florida teams really well. They beat Notre Dame the first game of the year. Yeah, we had reason to believe that team would be really good. And I was one of them. I was one of them saying they get the best resume in the country. But you lose 2 ACC games out of 3. Not only is this Carson Beck experiment a failure, but that program to this point has been their par for the course has been 3 losses, outside looking in, no ACC championship, which they haven't gotten yet. It's a failure. Can they go 5-0? And that includes the ACC championship game. Can they?
First 2 games on the road, too.
Percentage chance, I'd throw that at 20. No, not even. I'd throw that at 10.
Wow, so you're basically out.
I'm out. SMU, that was the first time they played outside of Florida all year. You know that? That was the first time. It was November 1st. So, and why? Give me one reason why I should have confidence in Miami that they could go down and take down Syracuse at home, NC State at home, Virginia Tech on the road, then Pitt on the road to finish the year.
I mean, based on what we've seen,
there's a better chance that they go 2-2 than 4-0 there. That's what I would say. There's a better chance they go 2-2. I'm down on Miami. I'm down because they do the same thing every year. They love to get your hopes up. And I had my hopes up a little bit. But they never win the game they should. They're really bad about that, consistently. That SMU game is a game that Miami should win. It's a true road test. It's against a good team in the ACC. But all things considered, they should beat that team. Louisville.
And they're at home.
Louisville's always a trap game. Always. Or always play teams tough. Miami threw 4 interceptions in the game. Carson Beck was the sole reason that they lost that game. The sole reason. You give 24 points to an ACC opponent at home, you should score more than that. As for SMU, you know, they scored 20 points in regulation. That's a winning, that can be described as a winning effort defensively, right? They got to 26 in OT, and then Carson Beck throws an interception. Ugh. Boy. What confidence is he showing you? You have any confidence in this kid?
And that's the thing with Carson Beck. I think he's a player that kind of rides off momentum.
Right.
And when everything's going perfectly, he looks like a Heisman candidate. But as soon as things start getting shaky around him and that pressure starts to settle, is where we see him crumble.
Yeah, like there are games. I mean, there are even games at Georgia. Like, you know, the Georgia fans would be sitting there like, boy, there's Carson Beck. There he is. Thought I recognized him. There are Georgia fans that say that all the time. Yeah, watching what the Miami fan is having to deal with now, he's been a failure. I'm out. There is a better chance that Miami goes 2-2 in their last four games than there is 4-0. That would be my closing remark about Miami. They're on the outside looking in at ACC. Start thinking about three other teams before you get to Miami. Keep in mind, Louisville only has one loss and is the head-to-head. So now they need help. They need a lot of help. Because Georgia Tech has two more games in ACC play. They're probably a shoo-in to that playoff spot or to the ACC championship spot. Virginia hasn't even lost a conference game yet. Path of no return. I think we're there for Miami. I think we're there. So for the Miami fan that's complaining, hey, why is Notre Dame ahead of us? We beat Notre Dame. You got bigger problems. You got bigger problems. And it's probably the rest of your ACC schedule.
Now, I feel like that's where Notre Dame kind of gets the easier critique because you don't judge them based on their conference losses.
You're right. But their two losses are good losses. You want to think Miami's good? Fine. Well, they lost to Miami at Miami. You think Texas A&M's great? Fine. They lost to them 41-40 in the final play of the game. Notre Dame's got a better-looking team than Miami does. And I don't like how that's the comparison, but it sort of is because those are the two at-larges that are going to be fighting for a spot. And the Miami fan thinks that they should automatically get it over Notre Dame because of the head-to-head. Doesn't always work like that. It's a piece of the puzzle. It's not the entire thing. Carson Beck's been a failure at Miami. 888-760-3776. Has Carson Beck, as an experiment, following up after Cam Ward, has he been a failure for what the Miami Hurricanes are trying to accomplish? I think this is a surefire yes. If you disagree, let me know. 888-760-3776. Colin Russo, Damian Perez, Russo and Rizzo. We'll take a timeout. Close out the program next here. Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Colin Russo and Damian Perez with you at the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. It's Russo and Rizzo, no Mike Rizzo today. We're streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter/X at ESPN West Palm. If you missed any of the show today, go listen back on Russo and Rizzo and Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, all those great places. Damian, I won't be here for the next 2 days. I'll be up in New York City handling some business. Business, pleasure. But nonetheless, so I won't be here. What do you say we put together a little bit of a parlay for this weekend's games? Let's do a little bit early of a Blitz the Book.
I love it.
Presented by Hard Rock Bet. Let's have some fun here.
Send some heat. Pin your ears back. It's time to Blitz the Book. Presented by Hard Rock Bet.
All right, Damian, let's look ahead at the NCAA slate this weekend because there's a couple that we could take. I already have a couple in mind that I do like. And one of them, BYU-Texas Tech is the big game of the weekend. BYU's undefeated. They're getting 10.5 points. They're getting 10.5 points. On the road as an undefeated team, I would say that can we root for a good game here? Is that unfair for us to root for a
good game?
So
you're thinking over?
Over is 52.5, but I think BYU
can cover that spread. Yeah, I think they can definitely, especially being undefeated in the spot that they're in, this is a must-win game for them. This is a prove-it game. So
that's number one. Number two, Indiana's going to Penn State this weekend. Indiana has made enemies throughout the Big Ten because they run up the score on everybody. They score 55 points a game.
People don't want to believe in Indiana, too.
And I think this is going to be a game where Kurt Cignetti and the Indiana Hoosiers are going to make it an abundantly clear point that, hey, I think everybody knows they're for real. They showed that against Oregon. But, hey, like, we're going to pummel on teams.
We're here.
We're going to, and like, that, it's not even a we're here because, like, they have been here. But I think the fact that it's against a big-name program such as Penn State on the road like that, they want to show things to the committee, to Ohio State. The spread is minus 14.5. I would take Indiana here. You agree with that?
Yeah. I think Indiana is one of the hotter teams, if not the hottest team
And it's about how they win. It's not just about winning the game. It's about how they
dominate.
They want to dominate, and they want to continue to dominate. They don't let up. They're not going to let you hang around. You know, they might have a bad week. Maybe Penn State catches them, but they don't have a hard game the rest of the schedule. You know, they got to deal with Wisconsin's of the world. Penn State is not any good. And that's your game.
That's what I was going to say. On the other side, you got a Penn State who's absolutely on the
reeling.
Ground.
Yeah. Reeling.
Trying to get through the season pretty much.
Right. So those two games I definitely like. Texas A&M is playing Missouri on the road. Texas A&M is getting 6.5 points. I would stay far away from that.
What do you think about Alabama coming off a bye, prime time against LSU at home?
Yeah. Alabama looks great, and they've played great in every big game they played this year. That spread is 10.5. This is post-LSU firing Brian Kelly.
That's a good point.
Keep in mind.
Teams always get a bump after that.
They always get a bump. Florida did against Georgia. You know what I would do here? LSU. I would take LSU here. Can I sell you on that? 10.5 points. They don't need to win. Competitive game. 10.5. You like Alabama still here?
I just feel like coming off a bye.
I hear that. I do hear that. Alabama needs to prove a point here. No problem. But they do have Oklahoma next week. So they have a tough schedule. LSU's always a big game. I get it. It's a bit of a rivalry for Alabama.
I personally think Alabama has the best quarterback in the nation, in my opinion.
Probably the Heisman. But all they need, remember, going into the bye, they had that catch-you game against South Carolina where they escaped, right? 28-22. But I just need LSU to play a little guts here. You think this could be a game where Alabama pulls ahead late?
I can also see points in this game.
From LSU? That's the real question.
That over. I mean, both teams are going to have to come
There's no doubt that LSU has talent, too. Like, they have a good defense, and they have, at least we think, a pretty good quarterback. I think we're on the same page. I think it has to be LSU. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think you've convinced me. Bama will win this game.
They will win that game. Oh, yeah, I'm not bad. No, I'm good on that.
But LSU will keep it
close.
We're
good on the plus 300. I don't need that. But I would say plus 10.5 LSU. That's where I sit.
Let's do it.
All right. Navy, Notre Dame. Navy's getting 26.5 points. Anything? Notre Dame always dominates Navy in this game. I was all over Navy last year, and Navy put up a stinker against Notre Dame. Anything? You want to take Notre Dame?
Now, this can be a time of possession game, too. And that's a...
Sell yourself on Navy here. I love our troops, but I don't know.
That's a big line of cover for a team that loves to run it.
Let's check. I mean, the thing about Navy... You're right. They like to control the line of scrimmage, but they don't have the bodies.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing I'll say is Notre Dame's defense is not nearly as good as last year. Not nearly as good as the last year. So maybe there's a chance that Navy can keep up offensively a little bit. But Navy's lost 7 straight games to Notre Dame. They've lost 7 straight. Last year, they lost, 51-14. Wasn't even close. I remember I was all over Navy in that game.
And they just lost pretty badly to North Texas, too. Which that quarterback.
I remember the year before that, they lost 42-3 in Ireland. And it wasn't until 2 or 3 years ago.
All right, you know what? You've sold me. Let's go Notre Dame. At home.
Damien, here's what I'll say. I just went through the last couple games. Since 2019, Notre Dame won 52-20. Notre Dame won 34-6. Notre Dame won 35-32. All right? Notre Dame, two years ago, won 42-3, and last year, 51-14.
So they've pretty much covered every year.
Pretty much. Is that a trend? I think Notre Dame here. Actually, you want to root for Notre Dame to win by 4 touchdowns against our Navy? Is that anti-USA?
In a way, yes, it is.
Yeah, it is a little anti-USA.
It definitely is.
Twitting treason.
What about college basketball just started?
You want a college basketball game? I'm going to be at Alabama St. John's on Saturday. I don't know if that line is out. We could check that if you want to jump in on that.
What's the line? Or what's the team?
Alabama and St. John's. We could see that. But I don't know if they'll do that because Alabama, it's not for a couple of days. So I don't know if that's out yet. We could find that. But they do play on Saturday. Maybe we can make a separate line.
No, it doesn't look like it's out yet.
Fine. But college basketball started yesterday. In terms of what you want to watch today, you want to take a really weird one? See, I don't know any of these teams, Damien. If you ask me next week when I watch a lot of these teams, I can give you something. But, you know, Campbell's playing West Virginia. Yeah. Campbell just played Wisconsin pretty well. I would take West Virginia in this game. Minus 16 and a half. They didn't play well. They lost by 34. But, you know, they did competitive throughout the game. Outside of that, I haven't seen any of these other teams play. North Alabama, Mississippi State. It's a 24-point line. Now, the good news is Hard Rock doesn't know these lines. They don't know these teams.
Right. Take advantage of that.
We can take advantage of that. Marquette's favored by 24 and a half against Southern. Indiana's favored by 30 and a half against Alabama A&M. 30 and a half, I would take Alabama A&M here. That's today at 8 p.m. Indiana, first game with DeVries, their new head coach. I'm okay with this. Here's one. Damien, here's how we close out the parlay to make it a four-legger. We got BYU plus 10 and a half. We got Indiana minus 14 and a half in football. BYU plus 10 and a half in football as well. LSU in football at Alabama getting 10 and a half points. And then Alabama A&M getting 30 and a half points at Indiana. Damien, I'm confident about this.
I love it.
You love it?
I'm in. I'm definitely in.
At Assembly Hall, can Alabama A&M shock the world?
What are those odds?
All those four together, plus 1,200.
Ooh.
$5 to win 66.
Let's do it.
All right. You can be watching Alabama A&M Indiana tonight.
I got to now.
Now you got to.
There's a reason to watch now.
All right, I'm in. That's our a little early of a Blitz the Book. But since I might not be here the next 2 days, I think that's why you got to do it. Great. All right, Damien. That's one of the weirder parlays I think we've ever put together. But I like the idea that we have three big underdogs. We don't do underdog parlays too much.
Right.
BYU, LSU, and football are both 10.5-point underdogs. And Alabama A&M is a 3.5-point underdog. We could have taken Navy. You want to be on Navy, we could take Navy, 26 and a half.
Nah, let's leave that one out.
All right, fair enough. There's your Hard Rock Bet parlay presented by Hard Rock Bet. How about that? Are you a college basketball fan?
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah, I love to watch. I think it's one of the funner sports to watch when it's just like a random Tuesday or Monday night and there's really nothing on.
There's a game every night. That's a good thing, right? There's a game every night. And I do like the idea that everybody plays each other.
It's hard to keep up, though. I will say that.
It's hard to keep up.
I usually really tune in towards the tournament time, but love to watch it.
The one thing I do like about this part of the year is, unlike football, where they want their bye games and they want to just destroy teams, there's so many games in a schedule where metrics and strength of schedule means everything.
Yeah.
If you're UConn, you have to play big-time teams. Like, they're playing BYU. They're playing Florida. They're playing big. Because they have to. Because there's these big tournaments where they want big-time matchups early in the year, which I like. I think that's the best part about it. Well, we'll see what happens. Alabama A&M at Indiana tonight at Assembly Hall, plus 30.5.
What time is that game at?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
We are not professionals, as you can hear by our reasoning. We're not professionals. But there's a reason. Damien Perez, Colin Russo, closing out the program here. If you missed any of it today, go listen back on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, all those great places. Just go to Russo and Rizzo. Go to YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter.com/X. Watch us back. See our pretty faces. The whole thing. And the ESPN South Florida app where you can catch all of our local programming, all of your South Florida beats in one spot. Big thanks to Damien Perez keeping us up over the airwaves today alongside Cade Chumson, who spearheaded that first 25 minutes. We'll be back at it tomorrow with either myself or Mike Rizzo. Having a good time getting you ready for some college football weekend action. This has been Colin Russo saying so long. We'll see you next time right here on ESPN 106.3.